I guess before I put on my discussant hat, I'd just like to thank everybody who gave talks today and yesterday for making Antonio and Michael and myself look great, because we can take all this credit for such a wonderful program when really it's due to the great speakers that we've had. It's been really exciting, and I'm very excited about being a discussant today. Before I start that, I guess I should give a few disclaimers. This pertains particularly to the morning stuff. I am a card-carrying Bayesian. I have been thinking a lot about ensemble models and specifically sort of doing a Bayesian form of this, and I'll refer to a paper that hasn't been written yet, but it's going to be real soon, real soon. So this morning there were... I'm going to find some thematic similarities between four of the talks, although I'll be up front and say that there's especially some connections with the talks that Friedman and Clyde gave. I'll start off with my cry in the darkness yesterday at this time was, what about uncertainty? Doesn't anybody care about model uncertainty or uncertainty of any kind? Because it seems like not everybody, but many people were saying, let's build a machine that gives us a prediction. And should we worry about this? And I would be the first to say, sometimes we really shouldn't. Sometimes we should worry about uncertainty, sometimes we shouldn't. In a very simple case, if we just have a single response and a single predictor, and we fit that model, we should not be worrying about uncertainty, obviously. We should be saying we have the wrong model, and any kind of inference we make on a straight-line model for that data is going to be garbage. So there's no point about talking about uncertainty until you can get close enough to the model or to the true model to worry about it. So if instead you were fitting a quadratic, and that's maybe that's not even the best quadratic, but maybe that's close enough to the data to talk about uncertainty. Now, believe it or not, I am going to actually relate this to stuff that was discussed this morning. This is a very simplistic view of things, but I sort of want to use that as an analogy to make a connection with some of the approaches this morning. Yes, I want the interruptions. But the kind of statistical inferences you'd be doing here would be more diagnosing a problem and saying I'm fitting the wrong model rather than I'm getting a confidence interval. So I was thinking of uncertainty in a narrow sense as in theoretical-based inference that gives you a confidence interval. I mean, yeah, model checking and diagnostics is clearly important too. Confidence intervals for the X? Oh, for Y at each X? But they'd be all wrong. Or, well, I wouldn't believe them much. I mean, I'm fitting the wrong model, so even if I got my confidence bounds here would look like this, I think, wouldn't they? Roughly. They'd be something like that. What? Yeah. not that. But I'd rather be here. Well, we're in one dimension here. Could you be that bad by chance? I think you could. We're in one dimension here. If you're in 40 dimensions, it's probably quite easy to be bad, I think. I think the point I'm going to make in a minute is that the very sophisticated methods, that we're talking about discussed this morning, I think are ways of trying to get closer to a sensible solution before we worry about uncertainty. That's going to be the underlying point I'm trying to make. So the picture I drew, I'm really being fundamentalist here, I guess, in a lot of these things like residual analysis and statistics of 30 years ago. George Box has a great quote about all models are wrong and some are useful. And I think that's relevant here, that there's no point in worrying about making uncertainty statements if you've got the wrong model. If we have a useful model that's close enough, then maybe we can. In any case, the picture I drew here on the left, I'm fitting my class of models there is y equals ax plus b, or a plus bx. single predictor. My true model is way over here. It's outside the space. So I can make inference about models in that class and confidence predictions and so on, but I can't really make an inferential statement about that. Obviously, one way to do this is to expand the class of models that you can fit and make inference about to y equals a plus bx plus cx squared. And then, well, in fact, you're probably even closer to the true model than I'm indicating there. Your best fit in that space is, it's actually probably closer to the true model than I've drawn here. But the point is that we've expanded the set of models that we can consider, and we've gotten closer to the truth, probably closer than I'm saying there. In the talks, in both Jerry Friedman and Maliz Clyde's talks this morning, their simple model was a single tree, and they were saying, well, let's go beyond that. Let's expand our model to get closer to the truth, because in many cases we don't believe a single tree is going to fit. And there were a number of really clever solutions for how to do that, many of them based on the fact that of saying, well, let's find different trees and then somehow combine them. So and there were many different recipes, and there's improvements on those that are very sophisticated, but certainly some of them are things like bagging. So you're moving outside the space of a single tree and you're getting closer to the model, and maybe if you do boosting or some of the variations on them this morning, you get to here. And in fact, the connection that Jerry was making, I thought, was very interesting, that both of these methods you can sort of think of as having a sampling or a Bayesian motivation in some way, that you have some, you formalize the idea of moving to these models as saying, well, there are many different trees you could fit, and we can move outside the space of a single tree by looking at many different trees and then combining them intelligently, getting here or here, and getting closer to the true model. And I'm the first one to say that, I mean, I have a machine myself that does some sort of inference for a single tree, but I'd be crazy in saying you should stay in this little circle here and get inference rather than get over here and get closer to the truth. Reuben. What is my true model? In a lot of cases, it's unknowable, I suppose. It's the population, which is often infinite. I mean, in some cases they are. In some cases, you discover something that's actually quite simple. I mean, in many cases, the true model's in here. You know, sometimes it is a simple model. Sometimes it's unknowable, I think. One of the connections that I really liked this morning was the fact that there was sort of some sampling or Bayesian or semi-Bayesian machinery used to get from here to here. I thought that was an interesting connection. One thing that I, coming full circle to this uncertainty idea now, is I'd say, well, if we're close enough with these models to the true model, and I didn't draw them close enough, but anyway, if we're close enough, we might like to do some sort of uncertainty statement now. That is, if we're here instead of here, maybe we should talk about how good we're doing. Here we shouldn't. And the one concern I have about these approaches is they've already used up the sampling, the Markov chain, Monte Carlo, the reweighting, all of those ideas that you would normally be tools in Bayesian approaches anyway for fitting a model and getting uncertainty estimates. They've used them up to go outside the space of a single tree and get a better fit. But now getting the uncertainty seems tricky. One other approach, and I mentioned this morning to Maliz's talk, that one thing you could do instead is say, well, if you really believe that your model is a sum of trees, expand your model space to include that and set up that as a full model with a likelihood, with prior parameters if you're Bayesian, and do inference on that space and get uncertainty on a model and not just a point estimate. So that's sort of an alternate approach to doing that. I guess a couple of questions about doing that. These are sort of questions for myself as much as anything. So I'm saying, a couple of possibilities. If this full inference model that gives you uncertainty, if it's close enough to the machine learning model, maybe we can just sort of use the inferences. So if I'll shamelessly self-advertise here and say Bayesian additive regression trees are maybe there. I'd play the odds here myself. I'd fit a whole bunch of other procedures. I'd fit my Bayesian procedure. And if I was here, if my Bayesian procedure was here, I'd say, okay, I can't make any uncertainty statements because I'm not close enough to the truth. Here's somebody else who's done so much better. I'm fitting this. They're fitting this. I can't do uncertainty. Yeah. Well, I'd use other people. I guess ultimately you've got to use some sort of validation machinery or out of sample. So you're quite...
It's a fundamental identifiability problem. You have data, scattered data, and you're not fitting well. Okay. Or I'll put it another way. If you have data that's highly weakly, let's say, and on scattered data is highly weakly, right? If there's no fundamental way to know whether that's a true target function that's going like this, or a smooth target function with
lots of noise
caused by variables you haven't measured. And that's, I think, fundamental identifiability problems. You can never really know how close you are to the true model unless you know the true model.
Okay, I agree, and I think that was sort of a trick question that you're saying that you can't know when you're close to the true model. And I can know when I'm not. If you can do better than me, then I know I'm not close to the model, and maybe you are.
Predicting well and when you're not predicting.
Yeah, that's true, but that's... Right.
Yeah,
that was sort of a. Yeah. Stan. Can you bring... So Stan's making the point that if there's a lot of measurement error, you can't do any better than that, I guess. And if you have an idea on what that error is, you have some idea of... I mean, that's coming back to how close you can come on the prediction side of things, I guess. I wouldn't claim that you can ever know when you're close to the true model. I guess we're hoping, basically. Maybe I shouldn't be hoping, but I'm hoping to say, well, I'm going to bet that I'm close enough to the true model that some sort of uncertainty assessment is a reasonable thing to do. Although now I'm kind of worried because will I ever know? I don't know. I guess I won't look any dumber than somebody else who's got the... If I can come as close in the predictions as somebody else who's got the best fits, then my uncertainty bounds are... well, are they worthless? I don't know. I hope not. It's...
We're
generalization. Another possible problem, of course, and I don't want to look like I'm proposing that you should always do this sort of uncertainty assessment, because the full Bayesian approaches can be terribly expensive. And so I'd be the first one to say that if I had to choose between... You know, if it's too expensive to get inferences for a model like this, it's not here, but if it was, I'd rather get the point estimate than get this model with the wrong model with uncertainty bounds, or perhaps just not be able to afford to get any estimate. The estimate has to be the first order thing, but it would be nice to get some idea of inference, and it gets harder. I guess that's one thing that's coming clearly out of this discussion, is it's a hard question, I guess. I still hold some hope out for expanding the space of models and trying to get some idea of how much uncertainty there is. A couple of just moving on a little bit here because I know people are going to want to move on to the reception before too long. Relating to this idea, both the method that David was talking about, some of these ideas, I'm thinking in particular of the cherry-picking idea, that it seemed like there you're going for a point estimate. Or you could formulate that whole thing as a big mixture model and do some heavy machinery, but you're saying, well, no, let me get a sensible single estimate of by picking out a group that looks like it's fit well, a subgroup, and then doing that, getting a solution rather than getting one with a full inference machine. I like that idea. It seems very nice. I also was really like the ideas that Adele talked about with the examining how a random forest is doing and looking at diagnostics and so on. And my ears pricked up when I heard about all these diagnostics because I thought, oh, maybe, you know, maybe we can actually ask whether we're how far from here to here we are. I'm not sure that the diagnostics you were talking about really tell me that. I think they tell me about features of this model, certainly, but and that's informative in and of its own right, but I don't think it tells us there. But there's certainly it seems like there's a trade-off there between learning, getting an interpretable model, and just going for the very best predictions. I'm about to switch to the afternoon, so if anybody wants to make more remarks about the morning.
So why should there be a trade-off?
Why should there be a trade-off?
Why?
Between. Well, the next thing so the question is, why do we have to sacrifice good estimates for confidence interval? I'd like to claim, this is a personal experience, I'd like to claim with the sum of Bayesian trees you're not, except that it takes 10 times as long to fit. So, and in fact, the algorithm that we do, it converges very quickly to a good point estimate, but we don't have enough runs of the simulation to get any clue as to what the variation around that estimate is. So we have to spend more to get an estimate. In that particular case, it seems to be. I would hesitate to generalize.
Okay.
I've thought about that too, and realistically, I guess I should compare putting an algorithm like MART or like what you were talking about today inside the Bootstrap and seeing if it does any better. It could do the similarly in some cases. Yeah, and that's something that's different, certainly, that we found that you do get different amounts of uncertainty about different points. If you're in some parts of the predictor space, you can get wide bounds and other parts very narrow, and that's harder to get. I guess you could get that with things like out of bag, couldn't you? Yeah. If you believe, coming back to the more Bayesian side of things, if you really believe in some of the parameters of your model, you can arguably get inference about those. Like if you want to do inference about how many trees there are, how deep they are, things like that, you can get some sort of a probability statement about them. Although the Bootstrap would give you some idea of what the uncertainty is as well. To be honest, I don't know. Certainly, it seems like in both cases we'd be increasing the computational complexity by a similar magnitude. The beer is calling, isn't it? And there were 10 talks today. I'm going to be, I know less about some of the areas in the afternoon, so I think it would be silly for me to be anything but less, a little briefer. But I like the talks. I thought the Deputovich talk on grid computing was really nice because it's, like a lot of the Generation 5 talks, it's been focused on, well, does it work? Is it sensible? Is it cost-effective? And it really does work nicely. I think the idea of using spare compute resources like this is great. I wonder if you could train individuals in an ensemble. The stuff that Jerry was talking about this morning is very, at least for random trees, it's very trivially. Not, that's right. But
inside of each tree, you can train, you know, you can look at the splits on the variables totally in parallel, and that's enough parallelization.
Yeah, that's right. So there's I think, and this will probably become increasingly important as time goes on. Rubin's talk about robustness, he was looking at both at robust criteria for a loss and also later he was looking at outliers as well. I wrote these as the talk was going on and then he answered half of my questions. But one thing that I thought was in the unsupervised problem that you talked about at the end, I mean, I guess you did some data analysis and found that outliers were interesting in this case and that that was why finding outliers was a good unsupervised way to find good points. I wonder if that's always going to be the case. At least interesting as an interesting class, it might not always be. That can be the case. Toussaint's talking about proximity graphs. I was really upset about the questions for this talk. Oh. Sort of adaptively going between outliers and class labels. So it could be a semi-automated approach to that. I don't have much to say about Gottfried's talk because the questions all ask the things I wrote down. How does it go to higher dimensions? There seem to be support vector connections. It's really nice stuff. I really enjoyed seeing the interesting connections there. Zolotvitsky, automated trade area analysis. These are really tough problems. I mean, the magnitude of the data set's incredible, and there's a lot of sub-problems like the banner store matching. These are things that you have to think critically about. I thought it was very interesting in this case that it seemed like feature selection was really important, even though you have to have the emphasis is on an automated machine. At some point, somebody has to decide which features are important. And in some of the slides that were given there, it seemed that there was a lot of attention paid to figuring out which features should be used, and like transformations and things like that. And I was also impressed that they were fitting probability models to this data. It wasn't just sort of a let's minimize least sum of squares or something like that, although that can be effective in some cases too. The last two talks, so the team of Rosset and Zhu, talking about L1 regularization and piecewise support vector machine paths. These are some very general questions, but I think the fact that you get this path of solutions for different regularization parameters is very neat. I wonder what happens if you get a solution that's not on the path. I guess it's just not under consideration as part of that family of models, but I wonder, is that path sort of dense enough in the space of all models that are supported by the data? Are there things that are off the path that might still be interesting? It's slicing through the posteriors. It's a set of posteriors, depending on how hierarchical you get with it, I guess. I thought it was interesting that certain classes gave you piecewise linear and others didn't. I hope that doesn't mean that these other ones are not uninteresting. I guess they're just it's harder to get the solutions. Like, I kind of like a binomial deviance in some cases than it wasn't in that set, but I guess that's the way it goes. I don't know if there's... there was something at the end that Shaharam was saying about he used a robust method and it seemed to get much closer to the true model, and that sort of struck a chime with some of the stuff that was in the morning there. It seemed like in this one case anyway, you got closer to something that was the right model. Although maybe that was just because it was a robustness problem. I'm not sure. And finally, G's talk about piecewise linear SVM paths. I like the phrase bet on sparsity. It seems like in a lot of these cases, we're betting on something when we fit a model. We shouldn't agonize too much over not making some bets anyway. I bet all the time when I make a prior. Oh, is that right? Okay. All right. Okay. And I mean, it looks like in some of the plots. Oh, David. Yeah. Yeah, and that was said several times, both yesterday and today. Slightly differently, finding good variables, but that's related to finding a good basis. It's a lot funner to watch you guys talk. There's a lot of words up here. Does anyone else have anything to say? All right, it's time for beer. Thank you, everybody.